Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, JD and Ailish. It's Text Line Tuesday. It's Text Line Tuesday. 590-590. Also in the DMs, JD Bunkus and Ailish Forfar. You can critique JD's form of his Instagram posts over the break. Or you can just be nice and give him a like.
Yeah, that'd be better. That's preferable, to be honest. Like, I would just prefer you stop by, throw down a like, and maybe
move on.
A nice comment.
Nice.
And keep it moving. Yeah, there will be, unfortunately, a little bit more Instagram talk today because, again, Blake and I went to Rage Against the Machine. Both of our
not
experiences.
Not the same one, right?
No, not
the
same.
You went out to Ottawa?
No, but I had so much fun at the Ottawa show that I considered going also in Toronto.
Was the Toronto one at like Echo Beach?
Scotiabank.
That's a different scene.
The reason that my brother and I went to the Ottawa show is that it was outdoors. And no offense to anybody in Toronto that went. Like, I know you guys got cool shows, but being at that that Rage Against the Machine, an outdoor venue where everybody's standing versus at an indoor venue where the vast majority of people are in their seats, it's not even close. Like, it's not comparable. All right? Take it from a vet.
All right. Well, you're going to have a chance to rub it in his face and see what excuses he comes up with. You know, he's the king.
It's penciled in for his excuses.
Okay, we got Ben Nicholas-Smith on the phone, MLB columnist and editor and host of At the Letters podcast. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Oh, we're good. We're back. You know, vibes are high. JD's back from vacation. We had a nice, relaxing time off. I don't know if you – did you take any time off All-Star break, or are you just grinding?
The All-Star break was a break in a lot of ways, which is great. You know, it's nice to be able to just watch the game not be working, so I'm glad you guys had a little break as well.
We needed it.
We had a nice break. The only thing is you get the scaries for this big time where you're like, I don't think I'm going to be able to host a radio show because I don't know anything anymore. My brain has been wiped. My hard drive has been wiped. I imagine that it's not the same when you're like doing when you're writing. But I mean, like those first couple podcasts that you do, like to start a season for At the Letters, that's almost the most prep you're going to put into anything. So you feel absolutely ready to rock and roll, right? You guys do props, you do your over unders, you do all your research. You've had the off season. Do you get those scaries? You get those like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing here anymore. I don't belong. I'm completely fraudulent. There's no way that I can continue in this career path.
Well, I'm glad that you showed up despite those doubts. First of all, I think I know what you mean. It's almost like, you know, you can get those, you know, before a big event, you know, maybe the winter meetings or something. You haven't gone. Like the first time I went back to the GM meetings after a couple years of COVID, it was kind of weird because I was just there in person after being basically sequestered away from the entire rest of the baseball media for 2 years. So it was a weird feeling. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's us today. So I think that I'm a bit rambly. So I'm going to try to be a little bit more to the point.
That's rare.
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep things tight with our guest here because he's a man who knows things, and I do want to hit on a bunch of stuff. So is this a eye of the beholder confirmation bias thing, or is this something that you genuinely sense? Since the firing of Charlie Montoyo, that there's something a little bit different about this team, or is that just a red hot series against a Red Sox team that was basically tanking?
I think it's more the latter, honestly. You know, and take nothing away from John Schneider. Like when they hired him, I thought he was a deserving replacement, and I still think that. You know, I think he's going to be very capable. I've only seen good things from him. At the same time, the Red Sox team that we saw this weekend was such a disaster. They played so poorly. And then that was on the heels of a Royals team that's a last place team to begin with. Then they're a shell of themselves. So, you know, the competition the Jays have faced has been bad. Now, they have done what they're supposed to do, so that's good. You know, I guess at the same time, I thought the Jays were good 2 weeks ago, and I still think they're good now.
Yeah, I think that they're good. I agree with you. And I actually think that even all things considered, not to be overly critical, but yeah, I think the Royals series was disappointing. That was the worst team in baseball that didn't bring a bunch of guys, and the Jays were not exactly firing on all cylinders for those games. They eke out the last one, and it kind of felt like they avoided almost a bit of a disaster to make sure that they went into the break with a win. But either way, like, that's a team that you would have thought, oh, okay, maybe they were going to sweep them, and losing any games I think is kind of tough. That's a AAA team for the worst team in baseball. So, yeah, I didn't love it. I loved the Red Sox series. The reason I kind of brought it up is I was just still, like, I know I've been off for a while, so some of this stuff is very stale and old, but, man, the Bo Bichette quote about Charlie, I just thought was so jarring to me. I was just so taken back that a guy would say something like that public about a former manager, that it made me feel, one, a little validated in the sense of, like, to me, I had felt like this Blue Jays team was off for a while and that they needed a bit of a shakeup. But if that was going to be the case, if Bo was going to take that stance publicly, it sort of made me feel like, okay, well, now that you've said this, you've really taken a different level of accountability. And I think that that has to sort of resonate throughout the group.
Yeah, it was interesting for sure to read those comments from Bo. I always appreciate when athletes are really candid. Obviously, he was candid in those comments, basically saying that he didn't disagree with the decision to change managers, which is pretty rare. You don't see that a lot. So, you know, like you said, now it's really it's about what happens on the field. They've made that big shift and made that big call. We'll probably see some more activity in the next week or so as far as trades, but certainly from a personnel standpoint, firing a manager is about as big as you're going to get in season. So, you know, that's basically one of their big levers to pull on. And for the most part, I think still add some pitching, but for the most part, a lot of this now is on that position player core led by Bo and Vlad and others.
Okay, before we get into trade deadline, which is now a week away as of today, just back on the coaching change, have you noticed anything like significantly different in the approach of John Snyder? Like, is there anything that stood out to you as notable in his, I guess, week and a half and plus the All-Star break, which we didn't see much of? Is it I know that they had some meetings as well during that week off, but anything different that you've noticed notably here?
You know, some small things. I think that seeing Vladdy in the two spot of the batting order was a shift compared to what we had seen before. And I can get behind that. I can see the reasoning there. In addition, we've seen, even just, you know, when Alec Manoa was getting really fired up on the weekend, we see Snyder going over and putting his arm around him, kind of talking him down a little bit and seemingly mm-hmm. calming him down. You know, those are in the moment decisions. There's no playbook for that, of course. Schneider seems to have pretty good feel for that. You know, at the same time, a lot of things are looking good in this John Schneider era, and he has yet to really face the kind of adversity that I'm sure the Blue Jays will under his watch when they play tougher teams or when some breaks don't go their way. And then at that point, we'll learn even more about him. But so far, he's doing a good job. He's playing some bad teams and crushing them, and that's what you want to see.
Okay. Ailis is right. We do need to move to some trade deadline stuff, but last thing before we do, you can tell that, again, we've been off for a long time because we're trying to fire off all these takes where you're like, dude, this is last week's news. Why are you going to bring this up? But the Manoa thing about calming him down with Schneider, I was a little surprised to see the reaction around baseball. Again, this is all through the lens of me kind of peeping at social media for 2 seconds, and it's your own little echo chamber or whatever. But and I follow some people that are Boston-based and whatever. But it seemed to me anyways like a lot of people were upset with Manoa and the way that he handled himself in that scenario. And I kind of looked at it and went, isn't this kind of what baseball is need a little bit of, is like a fiery personality who backs it up with his play? Like, we came off this MLB All-Star week where everyone was loving him because the way he was talking on the mound, the guy loves the game. He's someone who in the post game is talking about the history of the game and also baseball movies. It seems like baseball is his entire life. And yet, yeah, it seemed like his actions were like quite polarizing. And to me, it was kind of like, all right, maybe it's a bit more aggressive than pimping a home run, but it's sort of close to the equivalent, striking out a couple of Red Sox players, like divisional rivals in Fenway Park. Did you have conversations with people around the game, like around baseball, about Manoa? Like, I am kind of curious if you thought it was as polarizing as it seemed to be maybe to the outside world.
you know, I think anytime players show a lot of emotion, they run the risk of being polarizing players, whether that's fair or not. You know, and we saw that with Marcus Stroman, saw that with Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista. You know, when these guys show a lot of emotion, it invites, for whatever reason, a lot of reaction from fans and from media types and pundits. And, you know, really, I didn't have a problem with it at all. I think that it's happening between the lines in the heat of a moment. You know, he's not doing it. It might be different if it's a Ross Stripling start and he's out there just screaming at the Red Sox, then maybe you say, you know what, let's dial this down. But it's almost literally in the heat of the moment during, you know, immediately after competition, I think literally between the lines of play. So, you know, I think in those situations, yeah, guys are going to be pumped up at times, and they might say words that you can't say on Fan 590 at times. And, you know, that's
say one.
You know,
what words?
Yeah, what words?
You're allowed.
I will leave that to the imagination of the
audience. We'll beef it.
But yeah, it happens. So, you know, that's fine. I don't see a problem with it, and the results are there. So I think it's fine.
So trade deadline time. It's very weird because I had sort of talked myself into this quiet deadline, right? I went, hey, this team is not having the year that they're having or that a lot of people expected them to have. They don't seem like they're as deep as years before when it comes to prospect pool. There's a few guys that are very at the top, but I'm not really sure about what the second tier of prospects appears to be or whether or not there's a name that the Blue Jays would involve themselves in. There was a discussion about starting pitching versus bullpen. I don't think that the Jays are traditionally a team that like to be in deals that involve high-end bullpen arms, which is kind of what it seems like they needed. They're also a team that allocated a lot of resources to starting pitching, so I went, are they really, really, really going to be in on some of these names that had been bandied around? Now I'm looking at this, and after this series with the Red Sox, and I don't know, it just felt like a splash of cold water in the face of, hey, the number one wild card team gets three games at home. The Blue Jays are incredibly good at home. This is a team that can get as hot as anybody. They're still extremely talented. They just fired their manager because they have higher expectations of their group. They've got three starters that, if you put them in that wild card game, are going to be awesome. And they also have these weird rules of, hey, a lot of players can't travel here. So if you do end up in a wild card series where you have three home games, there's a chance that you're going to face a depleted team. Do you get the sense that the Jays are going to be more aggressive than maybe it did feel a couple of weeks ago? Or this is just kind of like, this is still the same approach, same front office. Nothing has really changed of material importance when it comes to their level of aggression heading into the deadline.
You know, it's interesting. I've never gotten the impression, and I was saying this the other day, but, you know, of course, I'm not necessarily getting daily updates and daily status checks, but I have never gotten the impression that the Jays would be anything but buyers. You know, I think that and buyers in specific ways where it's like, okay, we're not going to sell the farm for a rental, but, you know, they want to improve. They know what their needs are. Clearly, you know, they'll check on position players, and there's a clear need for pitching. So that's that to me hasn't necessarily changed. But I do think, you know, for all the reasons you outline, it makes sense to really be a motivated buyer in the next week. Because, you know, like, let's say that the standings remain sort of similar to how they are, then, you know, the Yankees, let's presume they're going to win the AL East. I think that's a very safe assumption at this point. So, you know, the Blue Jays then are a wild card team. Now, they're also creating a little bit of separation now between the kind of 500 cluster at the very bottom. Like, the Jays and Mariners look positioned to be those top two teams. Okay, so what if the Jays are playing the Mariners then in the first round? Now, you do not want to fly across the country to Seattle and have to do that. Plus, you would rather have the Mariners come to Toronto, where Robbie Ray, the last time they were here, wasn't even eligible to pitch. So, you know, I think for both of those reasons and others, you know, and that's just one scenario, but really it illustrates you want to be at home. You really do. And so you want to be that top wild card. This is the chance to improve their seeding. And I think that will motivate them as buyers in the next week.
Yeah, I think they should be motivated too. And I'm moving off of my position of not really expecting much. I guess the question always is when you're there as a motivated buyer is, are you someone who actually sets the market, or are you somebody that kind of waits in the wings and sees what is sort of left over and if you can grab a player at a lowered price? But the big X factor in all of this is what you mentioned with guys like Robbie Ray not being able to come here. And again, like, this is going to be an eye-opener once again tonight and tomorrow when you don't see two of the biggest stars in baseball get to play against the Toronto Blue Jays because of their VAC statuses. So they get put on that exempt list, Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. How do you think that's actually going to impact the Jays at the deadline? Like, are you hearing that it's going to be harder for them to make deals? Because if I'm a team and I'm negotiating with the Blue Jays and I've got a vaccinated player, I'm not, like, there is no guy that I'm giving you a deal on because you're working from a smaller market. Like, all season long, I had said it's fine for Blue Jays fans to kind of be celebrating this as though it's an advantage when some of these players aren't showing up here, when Robbie Ray doesn't show up or Arenado doesn't show up, but that maybe this was going to come to roost at trade deadline. Do you feel as though this is as big of a story as I made it up to be earlier, or that, like, this is going to have a real material consequence for the Jays over the next week?
I think it's a big story. I think any time that, you know, it impacts the actions of Ross Atkins, the entire Jays front office, and every GM in the American League East. I mean, that's Brian Cashman's worried about this. Chaim Bloom is worried about this. You know, you can go down the list. Really, this impacts a lot in the AL East right now. So it's a big story. And, you know, for the Jays, they have basically already had to determine which players are candidates to improve their team and which players aren't. So these are conversations happening behind the scenes. They need to know, for example, and a lot of it's out there publicly, right, with guys like Andrew Benintendi. Well, pretty sure he's not going to be at the top of their list. Tyler Mahle, same thing. So, you know, you can kind of cross these guys off, and they've done this in the course of their prep for the trade deadline. Now, it doesn't really change their day-to-day. They know who's available to them. They know who's not. They've known that information for weeks, if not months now. So that part of it isn't overly complicated, but it does close off the player pool. It means that, you know, whatever it is, instead of having access to throw a number out there, 50 trade candidates, that number goes to 45. And it just makes things a little bit tougher. So it's a disadvantage in some ways this time of year, even though it's a small one, and it's on the Jays to figure it out. It's probably a smaller disadvantage than playing your entire season in minor league park. So compared to last year, they're in a better spot, but it's a factor for sure.
Okay, so smaller player pool, we know that to pick from. What are some of the names that could actually be a fit that you've been hearing circulating around next week's decisions?
Oh, yeah, you know, I think, and what I'll throw out here is largely speculative. But, you know, I think that on the starting pitching front, you start with Luis Castillo and go from there. Clearly he's available. The Jays have liked him in the past. He'd be great. But the price will be really high. So to me, you know, if you can't get a impact starting pitcher, that's okay. If you have to get more of a back end stopgap, you know, is that a Martin Perez? Is that a Jose Quintana? There are ways to just fill in the rotation. And that's fine because you have Manoah and you have Gausman and you have Barrios. So, you know, your starting rotation in a potential playoff series is probably, it's okay. It's not a desperate need right now. But the bullpen, in contrast, I'd say that's a glaring need. That's a real need for this team. They don't have enough swing and miss back there. You're trying to get through four playoff series in October. You need some answers in that bullpen. So this is an area, like JD said before, you know, they haven't historically spent that aggressively on relievers in season, but at the same time, they hadn't signed George Springer for 150 until they'd done it. And they hadn't given up top prospects for Jose Barrios until they'd done it. And I think this is one of those things that no GM likes to do. Like, when you become a GM, you're not sitting there thinking, oh, I can't wait to trade prospects for relievers, because it's so volatile and it can bite you. But to me, now's the time for them to do that. So some names to watch would be, you know, David Bednar, I think, stays put, but Joe Mantiply with the Diamondbacks would be someone. Joe Jimenez, Gregory Soto with the Tigers could be really good. Even David Robertson, a pending free agent with the Cubs, getting a lot of strikeouts, 30% more or more as a strikeout rate. So that's the kind of pitcher that the Jays need to be after. I think they will be after, and we'll see in the next week who they can actually land.
Benny, great as always. I'm glad to hear that, you know, you feel some of the nerves that us mortals do as well. Keep up the great work. And we'll be talking to you obviously very soon. Hopefully again this week, because that means the Jays will have made a move. Thanks for coming on, bud.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
See you, pal. That's Ben Nicholson-Smith, MLB columnist, editor, and co-host of the At the Letters podcast, which is excellent. So you should subscribe, review, do all those things for Ben and Arden, because they'll have as good a coverage as anybody when it comes to the MLB trade deadline. I got a lot of thoughts on that stuff, and we'll do it again more later. We still got an hour. We got the Wake and Rake. We got Blake coming on. But now it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. You got something for us today.
I didn't put that in there. Did you put that in there?
No. Okay. Oh. Sorry. I thought that's
Austin
this was
put
your
that
thing.
In there.
Austin, sneaky. Actually, because my thing was going to be about Boston becoming the leaders for Kevin Durant.
We talked about that yesterday and something that you on.
Okay. Oh, you did?
You
okay,
weren't listening? Because,
no, I wasn't listening. I'll promise you this. So okay, I don't think there's anyone who listens to the station less than me.
That's a tough thing to admit.
The reason why is because, no, it's the opposite, is that I actually like our staff so much. I mean this, and I mean this very sincerely. Like, our fan lineup right now is so stacked with, like, good opinionists on every sport that if I hear someone say something about, like, it will change my opinion. It will change my opinion. And I feel like even if it's dumb or can be ill-informed at times, I try to do my own research. Obviously, you know, I think that anybody who listens to me knows that I try to prepare quite a bit. But if I hear podcasts or radio shows from people I respect, if I hear something they have that I also had, I won't want to do it because I'll feel like I'm plagiarizing, even if I had the same thought. And two is that maybe this is just something to chew on. Is it plagiarizing if JD has the same takes as other people at the station? And that too is that I will be swayed in my opinion. I'll want to jump on it sometimes. Yeah, it's just, it actually is tough for me. Again, who am I more qualified than? Jeff Merrick? No. Jeff Blair? No. Any of the Jeffs? No. Stephen Brunt? No. Right? Like, only Ennis is the only one who is on the station where I'm like, no, this is absurd. This is a guy who wanted Ralvis Martinez to start at third base for the Jays this year. Like, you know, I got better takes than him. But outside of him, like, it's just, it's a murderer's row. And so it's really, really hard to for me to navigate that at times. By the way, Ennis is on tomorrow.
Good. You can tell him your take.
Yeah, of course. He knows. Here's the thing. He knows this take. He listens to a lot of the station, too. He's probably listening right now because he's dropping the kids off. The something that you won that Austin has done, and I'll do this quickly, is he said, is Derek Carr a top 10 QB in the NFL? Because Devontae Adams says he's going from Hall of Famer to, which was weird. It made a lot of headlines yesterday. Mm-hmm. Devontae Adams loves Derek Carr. Part of the reason that he wanted to go to Oakland was not just the money. It's that this dude is one of his best friends. He loves him to death. And a lot of guys really like Derek Carr. He is he's one of those players that it's like Jimmy Garoppolo has this too, where we don't love a lot of things about the player. And yes, Garoppolo's been to a Super Bowl, but Carr has made a Pro Bowl. I think that you could argue that they're similar. Carr is probably a little bit better. No, I don't think that Derek Carr is
the top 10. Jimmy has the hot guy thing that we've talked about.
Yeah,
is
Jimmy
he good
does.
Or is he hot?
Yeah, and Derek Carr has the eyeshadow thing going for him, where people are
it's
like,
eyeliner for sure.
Say nice things about him. He's Blake's favorite quarterback. Again, part of the reason why he's Raiders guy. I don't think he's top 10, Austin, because I wouldn't pick Derek Carr. If we were doing a draft of 10 guys, he's not one of the first 10 guys I would take. There's absolutely no way that he is. But I will say he is slightly underappreciated. He is in that class of category that I think Kirk Cousins is in, which is there are times where you watch him and you go, this guy stinks. And then there are times where you step back and you look at the totality of the numbers and the totality of like their accomplishments and you say, this guy's better than you would think. And that offensive line maybe wasn't the greatest and that some of the receivers weren't the greatest. And I think that what I would say is there's a lot of pressure on Miami this year for Tua Tagovailoa, where they go, hey, this is the make or break year for you. I think the same thing for Derek Carr. Derek Carr has had a couple of years in a row where it's been a little underwhelming. It hasn't been anything spectacular. He has that game where in the playoffs last year where I thought he battled.
A sluggish end to the regular season and then not a great playoff performance.
But they got in.
But that's a kind of like maybe a recency bias to how the end of the season goes. I don't know. I might have that.
But I think that the big thing is that in their division right now, right, you look at that division and you say, oh, wow, Russell Wilson, Super Bowl champion.
Your guy.
Multiple Pro Bowl winner. No, not anymore.
Dartmouth commencement speaker.
No. we're broken up. It's over. I'm over it. I'm ready for the Drew Lock era. Talk myself in. Gunslinger Drew. I'm tanking. This is a tank year. It's fine. You look at Justin Herbert. And you look at Patrick Mahomes and Derek Carr, and you're going to say one of these things is not like the other. And so if Derek Carr is the reason why his team, you know, can't compete or they can't stay with the pack here, they fall into fourth in a division. A lot of people are going to be saying Derek Carr stinks. They got to make a change. That's the reason that they can't compete. And then if he's around and he does well, then I think that he will enter that conversation for a top 10 guy pretty solidly. So good something to chew, Austin. Austin Mackey, our producer. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter and Instagram. Give him a follow. Give him a shout. Let's take a break. Give us a follow and give us a shout on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, or shoot us a text 59590, whatever you want to talk about. I have missed you, listeners, so make them good. let's see what we got. Is my Instagram douchey? That was the topic of the day that we decided to lay on. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sports at 59 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show. It's Text Line Tuesday. It's the return of JD Bunkus.
Correct.
This is a stellar day all around.
I always like to think that
everybody woke up this morning like, yes, it's JD.
No, opposite. Oh. no, come on. That's not how my brain works. Maybe a little bit, but no, that's not what I thought. How many messages did you get asking where you were and whether or not you were fired?
Couple.
It's like, and I get it because Blake moved off the show, and yeah, we've had a
thought we got changes. Snipped, eh?
Well, yeah, that's not what I think about when I hear the word and get snipped, but yeah, so,
okay,
it's like, yeah, it's like
snip, snap, snip, snap,
snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. You always get messages asking, where are you guys? What's happening? And I go, it's interesting that you would be a loyal listener, an appreciated loyal listener, but also not see that it's just vacation. But I get it because of changes that have happened before, all that different stuff. Mm-hmm. But I always like to think that there's one guy, at least, or gal, who's sitting there going, I think JD got fired. Yes. And then they turn it on.
Oh, it would definitely be you as well.
And then they turn it on and they go, and I'm like, what's up? I'm back. And they're like, no, I was finally just doing the thing. Yeah, so anyway, either way, it's Text Line Tuesday, so fire away. 59590. Your hot takes, your gripes, your thoughts, whatever you want to do. It's so much. I actually thought that we're going to have, like, if the listeners are good, if they're crushing it, that we're going to have to expand more texts on the show during the summer. It's just, it's got to happen.
Yeah.
Especially post Jay's deadline in terms of listening kind of some of the reactions, because we're going to be on, we have Monday off. We're off for the holiday. We will not be fired. Just so that everyone's aware. You want us to like basically list out our vacation from here forward?
You're also taking next Friday off.
Especially clear. Either way, you know what? Make sure you follow. Yeah. I'm taking next Friday off because I'm going to Freddie Gibbs, and I know I'm going to get turned up, and so I'm going to need to – I'm not going to be paying attention to sports on Thursday night. I'm going to be watching Freddie Gibbs at Danforth. I'm going to be stoked about that. I just went to Pine Grove at Danforth, and I got to say I was a little disappointed. Either way, it is Text Line Tuesday, and if you ever do want to know whether or not we're on vacation, you just follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, and our Instagram stories should be able to tell you that we are at lakes and pools and away from these
Well, I had tough timing because I was sick going into the break. And so people thought that I was really sick, that I had taken a week off because of getting sick. But it was just, it led right into being sick, then going on vacation. But I wasn't sick for 12 days. I was sick for two. But yeah, I had an extended break. But people were very concerned about my well-being, and I appreciate that, listeners. No? You don't agree?
I kind of felt like... No, I just sort of thought, you know, you're milking it to get a little extra vacation.
You saw me on the Zoom. I was struggling.
You did struggle that one day, you know? The one day you were kind of struggling. Yeah. I am proud of you, though, because you know my
take. Taking time off, yeah.
You know, no. Not only just taking time off. Yes, one is that the pandemic take, 100%, which is when the pandemic first started, I thought, good, now we're not going to have the sick person at work who shows up and we go, what are you doing here? And they go, well... it makes sense when you're a part-time worker, and there should be something to be said, of course, about making sure that people can take sick days and that they can have paid sick days. We've kind of forgotten about that conversation, but I just thought there was going to be a little bit more of a culture change around feeling guilty about taking sick days at work and knowing that it's not really acceptable to show up at your place of business if you have sick days with a cold of some kind.
Well,
that was going to go by the wayside.
Certainly not going to pass the... test requirements to come into work anyway.
You definitely weren't going to, but what I think is interesting is that instead of going the way that I thought it was going to, now with the ability to work from home, there's almost even like more pressure from businesses to be like, well, like you're at home anyways.
You'll be fine.
So you can kind of work through it. And you're like, no, I'm sick. I don't want to work. So anyway, I'm proud of you for taking those sick days. And I tell people, like, listen, I think that if you're taking too many sick days, you start to develop a reputation. But if you're taking the proper amount of sick days when you're actually sick, you should be taking those. You have those built into your contracts, your work agreements, whatever. So do them. If you have sick days and you're sick, take them. And if you steal the odd one, just play a little hooky every once in a while with the kids or something like that. Nobody's going to snitch. What else?
Will from Niagara says, Will, missed you guys. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
We're back. Okay, here's a fun one, a little F1. It's been a while. I don't know if you watched any F1 over the break, but this is relevant to kind of how the season's going. Trevor in Toronto says, more disappointing F1 team, Mercedes, who can't build a competitive car, or Ferrari, who have a fast car, but several DNFs and questionable pit strategies. I texted him back already with my opinion, which was that Ferrari.
It's 100% Ferrari.
It's
no question.
So disappointing, the decisions that they're making. Like, you're giving away wins. Just what is the decision-making happening? And that would be the most frustrating for me. It's like, you have the tools in the toolbox.
Yep.
And
No.
You're just ruining it.
You're bang on. Mercedes is just, I think that them not having a good car this year is a tough look for them. It's a tough year for Lewis Hamilton. It's a reminder of, I'm sorry, but just how important the vehicle is. Not like we didn't need it, but I think that for those of us that got into the show through the series and who have fallen very, very deeply into the narrative that Lewis Hamilton has become the greatest driver who ever lived.
And
that
you have
he took
paid
that
an arm and a leg to go in person.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You're the true fan because you actually went
just like
to
your
the
Canada
event.
Soccer's number one fan.
Correct. You're F1's number one fan on the show. There's no doubt about it. But Ferrari's, for them to finally be back this way, and if you remember, at the very beginning of the season, there was the buzz where it was like, hey, Ferrari might be back. Ferrari might be back. And then all of a sudden it was pole. And then all of a sudden it was wins. And you went, oh my God, they're legit. Ferrari is back. Maybe they have the best car on the grid. And I think that that's still plausible, that they have the best car. They've got two drivers that they invested heavily in that are two of the best drivers on the planet, and they still can't beat Max. And I think that that's more heartbreaking than the Mercedes thing. Because when you're Mercedes, it's kind of like, hey, now we're just battling for points. Now we're battling for respect. And this is more of a reset year and blah, 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 blah. Ferrari, this was the back to relevance, the back to championship ways. And they've just had way too many mistakes to be champions. And it kind of feels like you've got all these things lined up except for what appears to be maybe arguably the most important thing, which is strategy and intelligence and luck. And none of that seems to have gone their way. So no, it's 100% Ferrari. Thanks, Will. What's next?
That wasn't Will. That was Trevor.
Oh, well, Will just said
Will just
back.
Said that he missed us.
Thanks, Trevor.
Okay,
thanks,
Dave Will. And Barry says, last week I went straight to the website to see if there was a format change because both of you were off. Then I realized it was the slowest week in sports, right in the heart of the summer. Perfect vacation week. Hot take Tuesday. Could the Jays go on a 2015-style run now in the back half of the season, salvaging some of what most people thought was supposed to be an incredible year?
Oh, I thought the question was going to be, are they going to catch the Yankees? I'm sorry.
I think that's statistically impossible at this point.
It's not.
Like, what are the odds on that?
No, it's not going to happen. Catching the Yankees is, I think that they're 13 games back, maybe 12 and a half.
Yeah, the Yankees would have to have a colossal collapse.
Yeah. Yankees like are, you know, 500 their last 10. Mm-hmm. Jays 8-2. I still very much believe in this Jays team. They need to add bullpen nasty guys at the deadline. To me, it's a no-brainer. I look at the starting pitching, and I will just continue to say this all week long. I think that they have already invested enough in it. And yeah, there's sunk cost, right? Where you go, hey, Kikuchi didn't work out. It's time to move on.
What's
it's time to get
Kikuchi?
A new starter.
I haven't heard his name in months.
Oh, guess what? It's because he's a write-off, and they're probably going to wait until...
You think?
Well, yeah, they're probably going to wait until next season, or they're going to wait at some point. Maybe it's going to be the Ryu thing where they bring him back late in the year. They try to take a look. Yeah, I don't know. It's not... It's obvious that the guy is kind of shattered mentally and that he's got the yips. Like, there's just no doubt about it. Like, he's the most telegraphed guy that is
time
having...
Time can heal that. He's been off for a while. There's the All-Star break.
I don't know.
Bit of optimism.
I'm not writing off his career as a Jay, but I'm pretty damn close. I don't think that there's a lot of runway there. Do I think that the Jays need a starting pitcher? Yes, I absolutely do. But when guys like Ben Nicholson-Smith come on and say Luis Castillo, I keep going, is that the best allocation of resources right now? Like, if you're going to be in a playoff series, do you need four starters of that caliber? To me, that's a bigger indictment of what they think about Jose Berríos than anything else. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I'm going to talk about this with Ennis tomorrow. But to me, Stripling is more than fine. Ross Stripling is good, and he's underappreciated. And there's a lot of regression feel to him where there's going to be the odd night where he doesn't look the same, and maybe he's not going to go six innings for you. But Ross Stripling is fine if you can add two more bullpen arms that are of caliber that are swing and miss. So to me, it's like there's not as much urgency with the starting pitching. I don't see as much urgency with the starting pitching unless you are really worried about Jose Berríos' year, which is a cataclysmic problem if that is the case. So to me, the starting pitching is fine. You've got Alek Manoah, one of the best pitchers in baseball. You got Kevin Gausman, one of the best pitchers in baseball. That's as good a 1-2 as you're going to get. Jose Berríos, when he's on, is the man. And you have to trust that he's going to find himself, that he's not a... I almost said bum, but he's been kind of a bum this year. Like, his ERA is over 5. Like, that's just not good enough, Jose. Like, that's just not good enough for the money that guy's making right now. But Ross Stripling, to me, is good, fine, whatever. And then, come playoff time, I'm not really sure that you need another Luis Castillo type. Do I think they need another starter? Yes. But I don't really care who the fifth starter is, as long as he can give you 5 and dive, keep you competitive, whatever. Because they don't have that internally. Mm-hmm. So, sure. But I would be more concerned about getting a starter that maybe has a year of term, extra year of term that you can project forward into next year, whatever, potentially have that replaces Kikuchi. That's a long-term business thing. Short-term business is, I don't care if the Jays go out and get pending free agent relievers. Like, they need swing and miss. They need dominant guys at the back end of that bullpen. You saw it the other night where the Red Sox were out of it but kind of still in it, and they're still going to the pen, and you're going, it's Phelps. You don't feel great about Phelps. They go to Simber. I like Simber. He's been a really good Toronto Blue Jay. A awesome move. But I don't want to see Adam Simber in a spot with a runner on in a make-or-break playoff series. Like, I just don't want to, they're still trying to get multiple innings. Like, they're trying to turn Trevor Richards into the long man. And I know he had those 7 games in a row that were great. But then, guess what? He still walks too many guys. He throws too many balls outside of the zone. And he gives up the long ball. I don't trust Trevor Richards. Jimmy Garcia, I really like. I trust Jimmy. But if he's your 8th inning guy, Mesa, same thing. Like, you could do better for a loogie than Tim Mesa. Really, there's only one guy that you're over the moon about, and that's Jordan Romano. And then after that, it's not enough strikeouts. They need blow-away arms. And it's fine to say they've got that in Double-A, and it's coming up, and blah, blah, blah. Who cares? You gotta try to win this year. You need that wild card spot. And if you get in the wild card spot and you have a bullpen with the team is currently constituted, I think that you can be dangerous. So there's some stuff in the offseason that you need to address. Mm-hmm. Again, I really do think that they're going to need to try and get a better lefty bat. I am curious about what the status of Kevin Biggio is at this deadline in terms of what they would be willing to do with him and whether he's a name that they're like shopping as the fresh start candidate, as a guy who's shown a little bit more this year. But they got to add bullpen help. Like, that's the priority to me with a bullet. And so do I think that they could go on a run? Yes, absolutely do I think they could go on a run.
Okay,
they're
well,
a really good baseball team. But I think that they need to add more to do it, because I think that if they end up without home field advantage in the wild card, that it's going to be tough sledding to make any major damage.
So before all those changes potentially happen, or before the run happens, Lloyd and Guelph has an interesting proposition. JD and Ailish. Uh-huh. Is plus 1,400 good value for the Jays to win the World Series? Because that might change drastically with all the changes that potentially could come. You don't think that's good enough?
I just don't think that. I think that it's too wide open this year. And if they were, if there was a gap between them and the field when it came to the wild card standings, like if I looked at that and said, oh, okay. Jays, this is where they are. Blah, 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 blah. The Rays are right on their heels. The Mariners, big win for them last night. Everybody else is kind of, I don't want to say out of it, but I don't, like, the Orioles are the only team in there. Maybe Chicago.
Right, and they won again last night against the Rays.
Yeah. I think that Boston's done. I certainly think that the Rangers are the automatic, obvious cutoff line if they're not getting in there. I don't really trust the Guardians, even though they're a game above 500 and they've got a better, you know, plus-minus run differential than the three other teams that I just mentioned. But, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm talking myself into it a little bit. Plus 1,400 isn't bad. I need to see the rest of the teams, though, for context on the value. But plus 1,400 isn't awful.
Okay,
but
I'll
to win the World
teams.
Series, to win the World Series, that's not that great of odds, I will tell you that. Like, given where they are right now and how tight the standings are and not having a necessarily guaranteed home field, just it's a bit of a long shot for them. They've got question marks with Barrios. They've still got question marks setting a deadline. I would say this. As always, if you believe that there's going to be a team that's hardcore invested and leveraged heading into the deadline, that's the team mm-hmm. you want to be on before the trade deadline when it comes to buying the odds of a team. You'll recall that a while back I offered the Mariners as a
They're
piece of advice.
They're plus 5,000 now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the odds got much worse. We jumped on that early at the right mm-hmm. time. We did a good job with that. So yeah, I don't think it's a bad bet. I don't think it's awful. Like, I don't hear it and go, yuck. It's not like Leafs bets where it's like, Leafs are plus 250 to win the Stanley Cup. And you're like, what? Like, they haven't won a round. But that one's not bad. I don't love it, I would say. What's next?
Okay. Nick in Burlington says, I know it's only been 8 games and the playoffs will be the decisive factor, but does Schneider have a shot at staying on as a Blue Jays manager? I love his aggressiveness.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah. No, I'd say he's the heavy favorite to stay on as manager. This is what made things awkward with Charlie Montoya. I said this before. Like, Charlie wasn't the right guy for this team anymore. And it's very clear. And I've been saying it for a while. And so to hear Bo Bichette open up about it, I thought, good. Validation for what a lot of us saw. And I have always been in the do not blame the manager camp. But it got ridiculous with some certain factions of Blue Jays social media with, like, the, you'll blame Charlie, boo, boo, bee, boo, they're never going to fire him, cry, 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 here's an article on, wow, they'll never fire the Blue Jays, cry, 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 or they'll never fire Charlie Montoya. He was not the guy anymore. It was clear. They weren't responding to him. They needed a shakeup. And Schneider has been the guy that's, like, beside him. But it was, I made this comparison already, but it felt like Sheldon Keefe joining Mike Babcock's bench. It's the guy that they liked. It's the guy that they wanted in there. And it's the guy that they thought was going to be different, who was like the organizational guy that there was not going to be philosophical differences with. You could discuss, like, why they had those philosophical differences, quote unquote, in the first place, especially with the manager that they gave their first job to. I don't think Charlie was a bad manager. I don't think that he was a good manager, but I don't think he was awful. I think his team let him down.
Like the players. Like, he was a player, younger player development manager, possibly.
And so I guess he'll always go down as a guy that gets some credit for that if mm-hmm. the Blue Jays go on to win.
There's a point where that changes to championship culture needs to be your driving force.
Exactly, exactly. But I thought it was unfair that people were comparing him to Dwayne Casey, because Dwayne Casey was far more impactful with the Toronto Raptors than he was with the Jays. Either way, I think that if you were doing the Vegas odds of who's going to be the Jays manager next year, I would say Schneider's going to be the heavy, heavy, heavy favorite. I think that it would have to take like kind of like a bit of a disaster where the Jays flame out or they lose a home series and there's real question marks about ways to reassess this and redo this. But to me, Schneider's the guy. Like that, and the more we're going to see of that, and
he's had a pretty good debut, so it's hard to think otherwise. Okay, last quick one here. John from Port Colborne. I got my first black eye in a mosh pit at the Dropkick Murphys in 1999 at the Vans Warped Tour. It was awesome.
Cool. I agree. There's nothing cooler than being in a mosh pit. I love it. It's something where if you don't get it, you'll view it as kind of a scary thing, and I get it's not for everybody, but to me, it's literally like a form of dance. It's just a form of expression. It's just a little bit more physical. It's not as dangerous as people think. I've never seen anything overly crazy in a mosh pit, and usually when someone gets out of line, they're the person that kind of the group essentially like ends up taking out and putting back in line. But it's a lot of people helping each other. It's a lot of people, like someone's about to fall down, people make room. Someone needs to tie their shoes, people try to form a circle around the person. Like it's not as violent. It's not people just throwing elbows and throwing punches. It's mostly like pushing and shoving and whatever. Like some of the bruises that I got are just like, yeah, incidental contact kind of things. The only things that I really hate are the people who just only shove from behind and try to stay back. And that's usually when all, you know, pit boss JD likes to do a little turnaround and like some pit justice. But yeah, yeah, I love it. And I think that there is something kind of exhilarating about it. And yeah, again, you want to see the differences between Blake Murphy and I, you just go to my Instagram.
I was going to say, it leads perfectly into our next guest.
You want to see the difference between two guys, you know, both the same age? Just go to my Instagram, go to Blake's Instagram, look at our Rage Against Machine stories. See who is, you know, Blake purports himself as this big rocker, you know, big music guy.
Big rocker, tattoo sleeves.
Yeah, no, tattoo sleeves, he's out there. He's rocking it. Yeah. But is he, though? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sports 5-9 of the Fan.